Monday, July 9th, 2018.
LA Podcast.
Scott Frazier, Hayes Davenport. Bittersweet episode. Everyone in the city is dead.
Yeah, there's no
We one are dead. The heat just got hotter and hotter.
Yeah.
The equipment has melted. There's no way to upload the podcast. So nobody will ever hear this,
right,
which is bittersweet. But I sort of like that it's just for us.
It's kind of like the road out there, the Cormac McCarthy.
Yeah.
It's just no roving bands of cannibals. No one else really survived.
A bunch of neighborhoods have lost power.
Yeah, we have actually still, so we're recording this on Sunday. We still have about 30,000 LADWP customers who still don't have power.
The Grove lost power.
I'm actually curious, maybe in the future we can figure out how exactly LADWP determines where they're going to go first, because Friday evening, the second highest number of residents without power was in Beverly Grove, and the first one was Westlake. And by Saturday morning, Beverly Grove had been almost completely taken care of, and Westlake and Koreatown still had thousands of people without power.
Although I did see some Hollywood people complaining,
right,
even into today.
Yeah, no,
Beverly Grove, I definitely have not been taken care of yet.
I definitely don't believe that that's the only consideration, but I am kind of curious how they determine where to send people at what time.
Highest power use for the month of June in LA ever.
Fifth highest
ever, period.
Yep.
Gross. Very bad. At the same time, it's very fortunate. I'm very glad that the Mayor Garcetti did not have to experience this heat wave. The only thing that would have made it worse as if the mayor had been in the city, not out of town for undisclosed personal reasons.
Right. Requesting that the media not tell people that he was out of town.
Yes. The only thing that made me feel better this past weekend was thinking of him being
somewhere
in some comfortable temperature somewhere else.
Yeah. I mean, it is great that at least one of, you know, I pulled a Garcetti this weekend too. I was also out of town.
Yes, that was a comfort to me as well.
I hope that you thought of me as well. I was nice and
We should talk about LeBron. I mean, it feels like so long ago.
Yeah,
but now we'll get the same. The city's economic boost from LeBron is going to be huge. Same as for Cleveland.
It's the
the whole city was riding on LeBron coming here.
It was really the 1-2. That's why there's no LA left, today.
Yes.
Because first, at the beginning of the week, you had LeBron announcing that he was going to be coming to Los Angeles. Then you had the Heat. Now there is
not the basketball team.
Not the basketball team. Scientific phenomenon. So LeBron is coming to the Lakers, and everybody in the city seems to be talking about it. I've been reading article after article about this is what his house looks like, this is where his kids go to school. Our previous guest, Alyssa Walker, had a great article about how LeBron is a biking enthusiast,
avid cyclist.
Yep.
And she encouraged him via open letter to bring his biking advocacy to LA and help the city develop bike infrastructure so that he can get from Brentwood to the Staples Center. I'm not sure.
How much can we heap onto this move? How much can we pin all of our collective hopes as a city on?
I don't know why we stop with just bike infrastructure. Yeah. I think we should get us to stop LAPD drone spying. Well, as long as we're asking.
I remember last season he actually took the subway to a Knicks game, I want to say.
That's right. I remember him doing that once.
So let's get a shout out for public transportation in there. Stop gentrification.
Maybe he'll have an opinion on the city taking federal dollars to counter violent extremism.
Yeah, I feel like that actually might be something.
And that is actually a great segue into something that we wanted to talk about, something that happened, I think, the same day as LeBron signed in LA.
Right.
There was a city council meeting to debate whether to take money from the federal government, specifically, I believe, from the Department of Homeland Security.
Yep.
$475,000 So basically, there's been a program at DHS for a long time called CVE, Countering Violent Extremism. And it is designed to send money out into the country, basically to get to people that are potentially being religiously radicalized
yeah.
before it happens and kind of nipping it in the bud. Initially, when the program was started, it was exclusively targeted at Muslim people. Mm-hmm. Then gradually it expanded to target Muslim people and white supremacists and like other kinds of groups. Right. Now we've gone full circle,
yeah, yep.
and now it again targets pretty much exclusively Muslim people.
Right, and this was a big deal earlier in the Trump presidency, right,
mm-hmm.
where he basically said that he didn't want that those resources to be focused on white nationalists,
yeah,
white radicals.
There was some money that was allocated, I think $400,000, to a group combating white nationalism that they revoked.
The very first time he touched the budget pen, he was just like, no,
yes,
none of that is
yeah,
going
that was
in
day,
my...
That was actually day one.
Yeah. So now there's a grant. There's a grant that is offering L.A., money as a pilot city. Is that
a pilot city? I think LA has already been experimenting with this program for a little while, but for the last couple years they have essentially been writing a proposal, because LA and Garcetti want this money. Most often, this is not unusual for a city when right. the federal government goes around to different cities and says, hey, we want to do one of these programs where we give you money. The cities go after it. So they wrote up a whole proposal saying this is what we're going to spend the money on for countering violent extremism. The proposal that LA City wrote up really does focus on community groups. None yeah. of the money goes to LAPD.
Mm-hmm.
It goes to local nonprofits and towards a referral system where these nonprofits or other people can refer people who I guess they feel like are in danger of being radicalized. And send them towards mental health services and things like that. There isn't really a police enforcement
right.
angle on this proposal that LA City has written up.
Yeah.
That said, it still is pretty much explicitly focused on Muslim communities.
Right.
There's one, I think $30,000.
Well, it'd almost have to be in order to get the money at this point.
At this right? point, yes. They knew who their audience was. And so they said the money's going to groups like the TIA Foundation, like groups that operate in Muslim communities designed to do outreach mm-hmm. and counseling and things like that. I think $30,000 of the $500,000 is going towards a group that screens movies against white supremacy. But that's the one drop that is not Muslim specific.
Yeah.
So lots of activist groups
mm-hmm.
are looking at this and saying,
is it not morally questionable to actually participate in and use this money for the purpose that it is intended to be used for?
Even if the best version of the project is like the most benevolent version, the fact that it still does target Muslim groups, is this money okay to take? Mike Bonin has had a very busy week.
Yep.
He
released from Central Booking.
After he got out of prison, he was arrested in an ICE protest, I want to say the same day.
That
so maybe this could have been on his way to jail. He spoke at the city council meeting. He said that this is according to the LA Times article by Emily Albert Reyes, the city should not be partnering with the Trump administration on terrorism because the federal government is very clearly determined to racially profile. He said, if you lay down with dogs, you're going to get fleas. And this is a flea-ridden program nationwide. What do you think?
So the way that you set it up is absolutely true. Federal money has been increasingly hard to come by, not just during the Trump administration, but basically since the Reagan era. It's been becoming more and more scarce as years go by. And it is generally coming to cities by way of programs such as this that are basically tied to some sort of goal that is important to the administration or across several administrations,
mm-hmm.
Going Trump, Obama, back to the Bush administration.
Yep.
And cities fight for that money specifically because in California, we have our own set of municipal finance issues, but across the country, new tax dollars are hard to come by. So the result is that cities go hard for these specific funds that already exist, try to secure them with the thought process basically being, if we can secure X amount of money from the federal government to achieve a specific goal that maybe we were going to do anyway, mm-hmm. then that frees up other dollars, locally funded dollars,
yep.
that can then be used to complete other objectives.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, I think the argument is essentially growing the pie of local finance
is
a common cliche that you would hear.
Last few years, a lot of the federal money to cities has gone towards like transit projects, especially in LA. They've really fought hard for...
LA has been very successful at, again, securing money from a shrinking amount of federal, from a national perspective, a shrinking amount of federal dollars. LA has been very successful at getting a lot of that money. So from one side, you have the city probably saying, we want to stop violent extremism anyway. We want to stop people from being radicalized, so we might as well take...
And it's free money.
We might as well take this.
And we're not using it in a, quote, bad way.
Yes, that would basically be, I imagine, the argument for doing it, at least as far as some of our city officials are concerned. The argument on the other side is that we're seeing basically a push from local activists and increasingly we'll see from local residents against cooperation between local governments and the federal government of any variety. Department of Homeland Security is embroiled in some extremely egregious scandals right now with regards to their treatment of essentially anybody who isn't white.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a sort of disparity in terms of whether or not you can actually take money that is openly being used in a discriminatory manner to sort of fish out certain groups of people by yep. the federal government, whether you can take that money without actually participating in building the larger structure of discrimination that yeah. we're seeing. So I personally, I don't think that you can do that. And I think
yeah.
that it makes sense for the city to not participate in this program.
I don't even know why the pressure should be on focusing on these groups equally.
Right.
There, no. As far as I'm aware of, there, I'm not familiar of a Muslim extremist committing violence in the last. What's the last case that you're aware of in LA County of that happening?
I can't think of one.
San Bernardino, obviously, it's a couple right. counties over, but.
Right.
I can't think of one either.
Right.
I am aware of the existence of a couple of white supremacist groups that are explicitly violent, according
right.
to like their charter. There's a Rise Above movement that operates kind of out of the South Bay, Huntington Beach. They go to protests and beat people up.
Yeah.
The names are all out there of who these people are. One was just released, a guy who's a PhD student at UCLA.
Yep.
It works at Northrop Grumman.
It's just near terminated.
LAX. He was actually fired. I knew they were investigating
yeah.
it. He was fired. Yeah. So, I mean, I just feel like there's much more documentation of white supremacist extremism and violence in LA right now than
oh, yeah.
there is going towards Muslim extremism.
I agree. And I actually think that the... as we get deeper into the first term of the Trump presidency, I think that it is... probably about time that city officials, the especially the highest up city officials, start to get really comfortable with the notion of not just blindly accepting money that they're
not
offered.
Even blindly accepting,
seeking
spending
out.
Like a year writing proposals and figuring out like exactly how to like refine the language
yeah.
so that the Trump administration will be like, okay, this is about Muslim stuff, we'll give them the money, and not upsetting the community when you're asking for the money.
Absolutely, yeah.
Like,
it's
really hard work walking that line. Someone spent a really long time
trying
yeah. to get this money, which, by the way, is not very much money. Like, $475,000, it sounds like a lot,
yep.
But in terms of, like, the overall city budget, in terms of the LAPD budget,
it's
a really a drop in the bucket. They probably spent, I mean, you know, came close to spending that amount of money on the labor involved in getting the money.
Yeah. The LAPD budget is like $1.6 billion. So this is very tiny.
I think this is a no-brainer. And I think Mike Bonin's right. And I think when he runs for mayor, when Garcetti steps down in a year, I think he's going to have a very good case.
Yep.
Let's talk about LACMA. You brought up an interesting story that I wasn't even aware of.
Right. This actually just happened to be something that I stumbled across the other day. We've been talking a lot about the impacts of the Trump presidency.
Yeah, this is kind of similar. This is about the trickle-down effect from
the federal government
to LA City, or the county in this case.
How basically executive power wielded badly, even in Washington, D.C., can have direct impacts on things going on in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. There's been a story for the past couple of years that LACMA has been trying to basically redo its entire campus. They want to build a new it looked like an oil slick.
It was designed to look like an oil slick. Yeah. They got an architect named Peter Zumthor.
Swedish, right? Or Swiss.
Swiss. Yeah, Swiss. I think he operates in some like weird, you know, hot spring town on like in the chalet in Switzerland. He's a very like secretive guy. And he released this I thought kind of grotesque design
that just spreads across Wilshire Boulevard.
Yes, it was meant to look like the tar pits basically overflowed and spilled. It looks like an oil spill across Wilshire.
Yeah.
Suspended above the actual road.
They changed the color.
They changed the color so it doesn't look as oily anymore.
Now it's kind of like a sandstone color. This is one of, as far as the art world is concerned, this has been one of the largest undertakings in Los Angeles in a long time, next to probably the Broad and the Walt Disney Concert Hall. This,
but the Broad didn't require anywhere near as much fundraising dollars from other people. It all pretty much came from Eli Broad.
Right.
Right.
So that has actually been
tax shelter for his art. So he doesn't have to pay taxes on his art collection.
This has been a major thread of the storyline here is that Michael Govan, who is the art director at LACMA,
mm-hmm.
has been really interested.
Art director means basically chief money asker for
chief fundraiser. He has been essentially going out and beseeching everybody with hundreds of millions of dollars to throw money at this project, which was originally expected to cost $600 million. They got some extremely wealthy people to sign on to that project.
They got David Geffen to give $150 million of that.
Yeah,
from just him
before he split town back to New York.
That's right.
LA County is promising to put a quarter of the cost up, so about they're putting up $125 million. The project is expected to break ground next year in 2019. They're finishing up the environmental documents for it right now, but they just came out, and this comes from a story in the LA Times that was written by Deborah Vanken, who writes that basically now Michael Govan is saying that they are actually seeing such extreme cost inflation as a result of Trump's steel tariffs that the cost of the new building has already gone up from $600 million to $650 million. So this is something where they have been desperately trying to put this money together over the course of several years at this point, and have been trying to, they keep using the word galvanize, they're trying to galvanize the very rich people in LA
mm-hmm.
to unite behind this project. But now the cost is actually increasing further. So they had previously said they wanted to raise this money by the end of the year. Now they're saying if they don't raise the money by the end of the year, they're going to need to essentially reconsider whether or not the design can go forward as proposed, because they expect the prices to continue increasing.
Now, one potential response to that scenario could be, who gives a shit? You know, if they can't do it, they can't do it. There's other places that money could go. You know, you referred to it, you know, especially, by the way, county services that money could go to.
Yeah.
The county expenditure alone of $125 million could go towards all kinds of mental health care, you know, like many, many different things. Has this issue been raised
as far as not using the county money specifically?
Well, just, you know, LACMA, it's kind of a nice building. People seem to like it. It's a popular place. That big rock people like.
I think that whether or not the project gets built is a question that has been raised multiple times. The question of what happens to all of that money, though, in the case that it doesn't get built.
Oh, that's interesting.
Is a separate question altogether.
Right.
Even the county money seems like it's one of these sort of like telethon things where it's like
some of it must be spent on the designs.
Right. That's true.
Probably having some kind of construction firms on some sort of retainer.
Right.
So a lot of it probably is not going back.
Yeah.
So maybe that's their best argument towards
finishing
the thing.
That a lot of the, you know, the philanthropically raised money would just go back to somebody else's pocket or spent on another museum in New York or Chicago or wherever else.
Yeah.
But probably not to local social services, unfortunately.
Right.
I have a hard time imagining that would be what would come out of this if the project were scuttled. I wonder though how we look at this as a you know, as basically a city that is, I'm not super concerned about what our rich people choose to do privately with all of their money, but as a city that is definitely trying to put more into municipal, public, and quasi-public works, it is interesting to say the least that we are already seeing cost inflation on such a scale that it could shut down major projects such as this. We are just now getting into building the meat of the transit projects for Measure M.
Yeah.
We have several other museums that are under construction around the city. And a lot of those things seem like they could be directly imperiled by these tariffs.
Construction costs. Yeah.
Construction costs rising out of control as a result of basically us just saying we want to charge ourselves more to buy steel. So
I want to read the article about, you know, how much more the Purple Line extension is going to cost,
right,
or like other specific projects.
You have to wonder, because a lot of those are contracts already in place. So you have to wonder if there's any kind of trigger if materials costs rise beyond a certain point.
A lot of those contracts are in place. I mean, it's not like they never go over their.
You're right.
Their estimate. They always do. So we're going to do a thing over the next few weeks. There are a bunch of ballot measures on the state ballot for the November 2018 election. They've all been assigned numbers.
Yep.
Now.
1 through 12.
1 through 12. 12 measures on the ballot. We're going to go through them one by one over the next 12 weeks.
I think there are a couple that we might combine.
Some of them are quicker and dirtier than others.
Yeah.
But we're going to go through, some are a little more complicated. We'll go through them in detail.
Talk about the history behind them.
Yeah. Give the official LA podcast endorsement. But today, we kind of wanted to talk about why some ballot measures did not end up on the ballot. Specifically because they were withdrawn by the people that were going to, the organizations that were going to put them on the ballot days before the actual deadline. And this is, to me, just like a really interesting look into our bizarre state ballot system and how it can be used in all kinds of ways that were not intended. So one specifically, there was a ballot measure put up by basically the California Beverage Association, the soda people.
Okay. Soda lobby is a powerful lobby.
Very powerful. And California has been flirting for a long time. They love the taxes that tax unhealthy products. Mm-hmm. We have all kinds of cigarette taxes in the state. And California has been thinking about a soda tax for a long time. There's plenty of political momentum behind it.
Yeah.
Soda is really bad for you. Soda and juice, I think. Anything with like really high sugar content, they were going to tax.
The nanny state social engineering away.
And so the Beverage Association lacking a way to stop this from happening by going by, you know, lobbying legislators who are on board with this, decided that the way to threaten the California's government to not go through with this tax was to go through the ballot.
Yep.
And so they got enough signatures. If you have enough money, you can get enough signatures no matter what it is.
We've discussed before, there are lots of accusations, not accusations, there are lots of people that will pay for signatures collected. There's a lot of accusations that allowing people to do that leads to fraudulent signatures and things like that. But anybody who's well endowed can pay for a lot of signatures.
Yes, it's expensive to get it done, but it is not a democratic process. It truly does not matter what the ballot measure is. You can get the signatures.
Favors people who have a lot of money.
Yes. So the ballot measure would have changed the law and basically made it so cities and towns could only tax groceries, any food or beverage product, with a 2/3 vote. Which would have made it just much more difficult for cities and towns to raise money when they need to with taxes. And that would have been like a permanent thing. This has happened many times before on the ballot. You need a 2/3 vote at the state level to raise any taxes now, basically, because of Prop 13 in the 70s.
And local taxes, the same applies in a lot of scenarios, but now they're basically like, we want to cover every scenario where a local government would raise taxes.
Yes, and... State legislators, I think, were worried about this kind of measure being on the ballot that basically says, oh, if the state wants to tax your food, they need a 2/3 vote to do it. It's pretty easy to picture that vote passing. It's much harder to picture it going back in the opposite direction.
Yep.
It's really hard to get something from a tax from a 2/3 vote to back to a 50%
absolutely
vote.
So this is kind of like the nuclear option then, basically, by the soda lobby saying, if you come at us with a potential soda ban, we are going to, or soda tax, we are going to attack your ability to raise any taxes.
Yes. And so not only did the state agree to not go through the soda ban, they put through their own ban on food and beverage taxes for the next 12 years.
Wow.
That was the compromise with the American Beverage Association. Please don't put this on the ballot to stop us from taxing you forever. In return, we won't tax you for the next 12 years. That said, there are a lot of major healthcare groups that are now saying we're fighting back on this. We're going to put our own measure on the ballot next year that says you can... it reverses the state ban and specifically says that you can and it enacts a soda tax.
Okay.
Yeah, that's right.
The soda wars.
But it basically just shows, I mean, like, how much having lots of money allows you to manipulate this system.
That's an incredible reversal to secure out of the legislature, who, I mean, they were on the verge of passing.
It's not enough just to be able to donate lots of money to politicians. Even if that doesn't work, now you can use that money in a different way to use ballot measures as threats. There was another really crazy one from the corporate lobbyists. It was a paint manufacturers. So a couple years ago, Sherwin-Williams and a few other paint companies were fined $2 billion by a judge to finance cleanup of lead paint in homes in California. And instead of deciding to pay this money, the paint companies got enough signatures, as you can always do, to basically put the burden of paying for this cleanup onto the state, onto taxpayers. So the ballot measure, all the ballot measure says is you're financing a $2 billion bond to clean up excess lead paint in people's homes.
Yeah. So there was lead paint in homes. Sherwin-Williams was found guilty of basically propagating a public nuisance. And this measure also would say lead paint in homes is not a public nuisance. So basically saying...
Oh, it was going to say that? Yeah, but it also financed the cleanup.
It does publicly finance the cleanup. But the first line of the analysis is it would declare that lead paint in homes is not a public nuisance.
Wow.
Which seems like something that you don't want to do.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that makes it seems like it would be harder to pass. It'd be one thing if it just said the state's going to clean up all the lead paint. Basically what it buried deep in the text was saying that now Sherwin Williams does not have to clean up
the
paint. By voting for this, I agree that I will pay for it, the taxpayer.
We're going to pay for this cleanup.
And don't worry about it, Sherwin Williams.
Also, in the future, no one will apparently be liable for the same thing that Sherwin Williams did.
Yes. So there was a lot of backroom negotiation on this one, too. I think the paint companies were also worried about the PR backlash. If this got on the ballot, it would make it very easy for consumer watchdog groups to say, boycott this. I think Consumer Watchdog specifically was threatening a boycott. Yep. Against Sherwin-Williams if this were going to go up. It would just make them look really bad. It is pure evil.
It's completely shady and not at all in a way that is hard to suss out.
Yes. So those did not make it onto the ballot for different reasons.
Right.
None of which really have to do with the will of the people.
Right. We will we'll be back next week with the first two super in-depth analyses for the two housing bonds that are on the ballot in November. Last thing we want to talk about for this week is election turnout. The state is
done. That's right, we have to gloat.
State is done counting votes.
I almost forgot to gloat.
Remember a couple weeks ago when we told you that the turnout wasn't as bad as it seemed?
Yes, there was all kinds of turnout shaming in the LA Times and elsewhere. For which always happens in Los Angeles, where they said, "How dare citizenry not show up to execute their right to vote?" And they jump on this so quickly before even close to all the votes are counted.
Yep.
And now the votes are all counted, and turnout was pretty great.
It was pretty good statewide.
Yes.
I think we were up to 40% as a state, 39-40%.
That's really turnout. High.
Yep, highest since 1998.
Yes.
For a primary during this sort of off-year cycle.
The equivalent election, like a gubernatorial primary, basically.
Right. And that was also true for
LA County.
Yeah.
Yes. I'm not sure what was going on in 1998, but everyone really seemed invested in that election. That was Gray Davis's election. I don't know why that one was generated so much turnout. But yeah, LA's turnout was 29%, not as high as it was on the state level, but we didn't really have that much to vote on in LA.
Right.
So that's great. It was a huge improvement on the 2014 elections. It's a very good sign for civic engagement. So I assume the LA Times editorial board and Steve Lopez and all the people who wrote columns accusing everyone who lives in the city of being civically irresponsible will apologize.
I think so.
And also to us.
A round of apologies are definitely in order. Starting and ending with us.
Yes. So that was a good gloat. We will be back next week with hopefully more stuff to gloat about. No, we won't be back because we died. We died. This and all our equipment is broken. This is LA Podcast. Bye.